the great Deacon Melchizedek Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Now, if everyone remembers the last time I spoke about worldly music and the effects it has on your mind, this time I'm going to continue to speak on this. And whenever you listen to this worldly music, you're taking the position of Satan. If we could turn over to Yochanan 8. Yochanan 8 and verses 44. It's found on page 825. And it says, "You are of your teacher, who is Satan the devil. And whatever she who is your teacher desires, you will do. She was a murderer from the beginning and remained not in the truth, because there is no truth in her. Because when you speak of your falsehoods, you speak of her words, because she is a liar and the teacher of all lies." So this is what I'm talking about whenever I say you're taking the position of Satan the accuser. And you won't see these, the bad fruits that come out at first, but later on, whenever you continue to listen to it, it'll overtake your mind. And remember, it's subtle and crafty, like it says in Genesis 3. And let me give you an example. Subtle is to imagine that it's great and to be sneaky. Let me give you an example. For example, like a lion or a tiger. Whenever they're chasing down an animal, whenever they first see the animal, they sneak up on it. Now, some people might say, well, it's not a law, so we could listen to it. So, if we could turn over to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17, verses 8 through 11. It's found on page 161. It says, "Go to the priests who are Levites, and to the judge who is in office at that time. Ask for their decision, and they will give you the sentence that they pronounce for you. You must act according to the sentence they pronounce for you, at the place Yahweh chooses. Be careful to do all that they order you to do. According to the law they teach you, you shall do. And according to the decision they give you, you shall do. You must not turn aside from the right hand nor to the left hand from the sentence they pronounce for you." Now, Overseer Yeshua Hawkins is said not to be listening to worldly music because it affects your mind. And in the Peaceful Solution, it says how there every action, there's a reaction. So whenever you listen to this music, this action, it gives a bad reaction. It's a negative influence on your mind. Now, think of your mind here as an orange. You can see this orange here. And the more you listen to worldly music, the more it affects your mind. And then soon your mind will be like this. You can see this. Alright. So, we need to come out of this world. I have an article here if you can see that. It talks about music and the powerful effects it has on the brain. It says music is one of the most powerful forms of media dependent on people of all age. And a simple melody music can provoke raw emotions such as anger and rage. And I encourage you to read in chapter 3 of the self-control unit. It talks about controlling your anger. And music has powerful effects on the brain. It can stir emotions. It can interfere with your learning. It can distract your influence, like an example is like music can make you forget your problems, and it can shorten your attention span. It can cause increased emotion effects rather than neutral emotions. And music has the power to change how we feel, but it could affect us physically too. Yes, music affects people's behavior. Many people tend to act and live basing on the kinds of music they listen to. And the impacts of music on the brain is usually documented in MRI, and which affects activity whenever music is played. And music has been known to have a very strong effect on emotions, although the overall effect has not been fully understood. You can see this here. Music on the mind. And listening to music affects approximately 10 different parts of the brain. You can see this here. Zoom in here. Now remember what I told you. Remember what I said about the orange and how it messes up your mind. And one of these things here, it talks about how it has an emotional reaction to music. And it says that whenever you listen to the music, it has a bad influence on your mind. And we should not be listening to this worldly music. I have another article here. And it says, this is your brain on music. You can see that there. And this right here, it talks about how brain religion involved in movement, attention, planning, and memory consistently shows whenever people listen to music that it messes up their brain. And this means when we experience music and other things that are going on, it messes up your mind. And then I have another one here. See that? It talks about there is some music that communicates harmful messages, especially when it reaches a vulnerable adolescence. And music has been shown to reduce accuracy in typewriting and handwriting, and the results being shown in an increase of numbers of errors. And music has been proven in electrical in the human body. And it talks about in the last four decades how this music here, it has references to drugs and violence. And this is the music here, the ones that have drugs, that talk about drugs and violence and encourage you to do these things, that messes up your brain. And one more article here. It says, does the type of music a child listens to affect the way that they behave? Yes, it does. And music is an important socialization tool for children. And it's frequently got bad over the last 40 years. And it says people who listen to heavy metal music as substance abuse have more of a desire to get into risky behaviors during adolescence. And we should not be listening to this music. If we could turn to the back of our book of Yahweh, it's Law 73. And it says, we must confess our sins to Yahweh and repent for them, and be converted to keeping of Yahweh's laws. And it has a scripture there, Numbers 5, verses 6 through 7. If we could turn there. Numbers 5, verses 6 through 7. Yes. And it's found on page 113, and it says, speak to the children of Israel. Whenever a man or woman commits any wrong common to mankind, being unfaithful to Yahweh and listening to worldly music is wrong. And it says in verse 7, and we must confess our sins that he has committed, that the person has committed, and he shall make restitution for it. And so, yes, we should stop listening to worldly music. And the House of Yahweh members should not be listening to worldly music, because this is not Yahweh's way. And we are taught that in the worldly music, you are taught rage, violence, and subliminal messages. When we constantly listen to these, we act in a negative way. And we are told in Proverbs to guard our mind. and we should guard our mind. And with that, everyone please stand. I'd like to turn over to the next speaker, Deacon David.
Shabbat shalom, saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. I really look forward to hearing more about that music, and so we're going to hear a little bit more about it right now. First of all, that information that the great future priest and deacon Melchizedek just brought is some amazing information. In fact, I hope I can get that chart from him and maybe show something else on there for you to look at that's very important. But if you remember, Pastor has told us before that if we listen to worldly music, that we are listening to Satan. We're actually making Satan our teacher. And so after doing without music for a while in the house of Yahweh, it was cleaned up a little bit, and now we have beautiful music without worldly influence, and the only influence in our music is the influence of Yahweh. Praise Yahweh. If you'll turn to page 733, it's Matithias 7, 15 through 18. Page 733. And if you look at Matithias 7, 15 through 18, it says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You will know them by their fruits." Let's jump down to verse 17. "Likewise, every righteous tree brings forth righteous fruit, but a tree of evil brings forth fruit of iniquity." And then in verse 18, "A righteous tree cannot bring forth fruit of iniquity, and nor can a tree of evil bring forth fruits of righteousness." Now remember, a tree of evil cannot bring forth fruits of righteousness. Now, the Catholic Church has been pushing this music over the last several years. Well, I mean, all throughout history. But recently the Pope said, this tree of evil, the Pope said that music is important. He said it can bring hope to wounded humanity. Music and singing done well can help people to receive God. So music and singing done well can help people receive God. And then there was the World Youth Day 2013, Pope Francis said. He said, "We need saints without cassocks and veils. We need saints that go to movies, that listen to music, and hang out with friends." That doesn't sound like the house of Yahweh. That's the only saints I know about. But he says they need saints that go to movies, that listen to music, and hang out with friends. My question to you today would be, do you fit that category? No. Praise Yahweh. If anybody listening to this message today can say in their mind that they fit that category in any manner, whether the movies, whether the music, or just hanging out with friends, there needs to be some adjustment to come in unity with Yahweh. In fact, if you'll turn to page 964, that's Yochanan 2:15 on page 964. Just to remind you, in fact, all of this is a reminder to you, to bring to your remembrance the things that we've been taught over the years, that Pastor has diligently taught us. And with all diligence and care and love, he earnestly wants us to take hold of these teachings and put these things away from us, just like the great future priest just said. Look at verse 15, Yochanan 2:15 on page 964. "Do not love the world, nor the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." And what is love? Love, of course, is keeping the laws of Yahweh. Now, we've already been told that we need to put this music and these movies and everything aside. We don't need to be just hanging out, you know, idle talk, idle hands. What does it lead to? Leads to evil. So we need to get involved in the work of Yahweh. And Pastor's brought many sermons dealing with this. And this should be a great reminder and an opportunity for us to take hold of the theme for the feast, which is sin never again. Sin never again. Sin never again. I want to take a look at the chart that the great deacon had. Let me see if I can zoom out on it a little here. Okay, so these are the 10 different areas of the brain that music has an effect on. And one of them, I can't even pronounce it, amygdala, emotional reactions to music, and it is right here in the center. Then all around it, you have a portion that connects the left and right hemispheres. You have an area that deals with movement and foot tapping and so forth. Then an area that deals with creation of expectations. Then you have an area that is tactile feedback from instruments and dancing. Then you have an area that's the first stages of listening to sounds, the perception and analysis of tones. Then an area right here in the middle, too, it's the memory for music, the musical experiences and context. Then you have an area that is about the reading of music. And then another area that involves the playing of an instrument and so forth. And so music affects all these different areas of the brain. Now, the word music, I looked it up, and in the American Heritage Dictionary, and the word music says the art of arranging sounds in time so as to produce a continuous, unified, and evocative composition. It goes on to say vocal or instrumental sounds, a musical accompaniment, a particular category of music. But to get down to the etymology of it, it says that it comes from Latin word musica, the Greek word musiki, and of the muses. Now, if you look up the word muse, there's actually two words. One is about the Greek mythology and the nine daughters of Zeus and their guiding spirit and source of inspiration. I'd like you to remember that too, a source of inspiration for music. Then the other one is to be absorbed in one's thoughts, engage in meditation, to consider or say thoughtfully. In fact, when I looked, there was a verse in the scriptures, and I looked it up in Strong's, and musing is word 1901 from 1897, and it's murmur, complaint, or meditation. And then you go to the actual 1897, and it's hagal. It means to growl, sighing, low sounds, or poetic. To murmur in pleasure or anger, and by implication to ponder, imagine, meditate, mourn, mutter, roar. Remember that word roar. To speak, talk, and utter. In Psalms 22:13, in fact, let's look at that real quick. Psalms page 22, or Psalms 22:13 on page 442. It says, they gape on me with their mouths open, or with their mouths, as ravening and roaring lions. They gape at me with their mouths as ravening and roaring lions. And I thought for a minute, I thought that had more to do with the sight, you know, and gazing and gaping at someone. But it's actually, you look it up and it talks about an open mouth of speaking and singing even. Now, we need to remember that that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. In fact, in Ephesians 2:2 on page 916, Ephesians 2:2 on page 916, and number 1, and to you who are dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you walked in times past according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the God that is now at work in the children of disobedience, the disobedient. Remember, she's the prince of the power of the air, of the airwaves, putting these messages out to all the world. the sounds, the rhythms. They open up the mind to lyrics. And these lyrics, you know, it's been associated with people hearing voices and being told to say and do things. There's been many, many cases, you could look it up, many cases where people say, well, you know, they told me to do it. Where'd they tell you to do it? Well, they told me to do it in the music. In fact, the music industry, and there's a lot more of this to come, but in the music industry, it is just totally evil. A few of the quotes from some of the popular singers is, I felt like a hollow temple filled with many spirits, each one passing through me, each inhabiting me for a little time and then leaving to be replaced by another. That was John Lennon. One of the singers from the Red Hot Chili Peppers says, music is really great. It can move you. You know, a large group of people. It can inspire and move a large group of people. Another one says, I wake up from dreams and go, wow, put this down on paper. The whole thing is strange. You hear the words, everything's right there in front of your face. I feel that somewhere, someplace, it's been done, and I'm just a courier bringing it to the world. And that was actually Michael Jackson. In another one, it says, we receive our songs by inspiration. It's like a seance. That's what Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones, said. Another singer said, I can explain everything better through music. You hypnotize people. And when you get people at their weakest point, you can preach into the subconscious mind what we want to say. Remember, Satan is preaching to you when you're listening to satanic music, when you're listening to the music of the world. One more thing here. Here's some lyrics from one of the songs from a group kind of gone by, I think. But it says, let the music take your mind. Everyone feel it inside. Let the music take your mind. And then it goes on. It says that over and over and over again. And with the rhythmic beats that they use. I have a lot more information on this, which is much too much to be brought right now. But remember in... let's look at 1 Corinthians on page 893. 1 Corinthians on page 893. 1 Corinthians 10, 12. This is the thing. This stuff is all planned out. Those songs that you listen to, the worldly songs, somebody has already put things in there. And the music is designed to put you in this trance, to enter into different places into the mind. Remember the... remember the chart. And to enter into different places of the mind to actually control you and make you do things that you may not normally do. And remember, it's gotten stronger in these last days. You know, Satan's come down to us. You know, woe to the earth. Satan's come down to us and she's mad. It says in verse 12, therefore, let him who thinks he stands be on guard that he does not fall. Be on guard that you do not fall to this evil. Don't think, well, it's not going to affect you, because this is well planned out from the evil people in the world, this entertainment industry. Just real quick, there is an area of the brain, it talks about beta is a portion that is attending to the task, alpha is predominant, it's a relaxed state. These are states of the mind. Theta is a relaxed state, and then delta is sleep condition. If you use tones and rhythms to control the brain waves, you can actually get into a state where the entire brain resonates and the waveforms of both hemispheres become identical in frequency, and then they're able to use sound phasing and subliminal programming on people. A final statement on this says, the listener's brain waves may be led to alpha, theta, or delta state according to the whim of the controller. So it can actually be done through the lyrics and through the sounds of music, and people can actually be controlled to do things they normally would not do. Like I said, there's many cases of it out there. You can look it up for yourself. Yahweh willing, there will be more brought on this later. But one thing to keep in mind, that the schools, you know, they push music. And in fact, in homeschooling, almost every state in the United States requires some type of musical, they call it creative arts or music class. And they have varying degrees of what's acceptable, but they're pushing this music. You know, the Catholic Church is pushing music. And the Pope, remember when he said that, he said that this music is very important. There are a lot more quotes on that, but I'm out of time. So if you'll all please stand. Just please remember to be on guard and don't think you're so strong that it will not affect you, because it will. It's taken down many people, and Satan is going about like a roaring, singing lion. Okay? So if you all please stand, I'd like to present to you at this time the great Kahan Alyanai Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and everyone. Today, I'm just going to be speaking on some of the things that we heard already from Pastor, where he was speaking about water and about some of the things you could split water into, and the amount of energy that could be generated from water. And we're just going to be looking at some of those things today. It's always a great honor to stand before the called out ones of Yahweh. And to start, I'd like us to turn quickly to page 975 of the book of Yahweh to set the pace. And that's Revelation 6, from 12 to 17. That's on page 975. And it says, the end of the great tribulation, the beginning of the day of Yahweh. There, verse 12 says, and I looked when he had opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, as a fig tree drops its untimely figs when it's shaken by a mighty wind. And and the stars of heaven fell into the earth. Verse 14 now. And the heaven departed like a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man sought protection for themselves in their governments, and in their assemblies, and in the houses of their gods, Elohim, and said to the houses of their gods, Elohim, and the assemblies, fall on us and protect us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the judgment of the Lamb. For the great day of his judgment has come, and who will be able to stand? Speaking about some of the events that are, you know, fixing to take place pretty shortly now, we're going to look at some of the unintended consequences of some of the power that they already possess at this time. They think they can plan everything out, and they think they have an escape route, they have a way out of everything, they have it all, calculations and stuff. But usually when things like this take place, there are many things that could, you know, result from it that you're not going to know unless you're the one sent and you're inspired by Yahweh to bring these things forward and warn the world about these things that are fixing to take place. So, speaking about water, at its most basic, like we heard last week, water is made up of one oxygen atom and two hydrogen atoms bonded together. And usually they share what we call electrons. But first of all, I'd like to just show what an atom looks like. I hope you can all see that clearly. Yeah. So this right here, that's a representation of the hydrogen atom. Not necessarily, you know, exactly how it looks, but this is just to help us understand what it means, you know, showing certain basic properties of it. So the first one there is hydrogen, and the one right there is helium. Now, at the middle of it, right in the center there, that little dot there, that's a proton in the middle of hydrogen. That represents the nucleus. You know, like if you look at diagrams of microbes too, you notice that they have nucleus in the middle, and then right here you have the circle, the outer circle there, that's the electron shell. And the yellow ball you see there represents the electrons. Like I said, it's a little bit more complex than this. This is just a simplified representation to help us understand what the atom is. Now, the atom, you know, when you have many of them bonded together, you know, you got trillions of them, then you'll be able to see maybe like in a handful or maybe in a speck of sand, you have billions of trillions of these things, you know, bonded together there. And they form interactions. They form interactions with one another. They form interactions with other types of atoms to give us some of the substances that we see every day. Now, these things are constantly moving. I remember Pastor saying at one time that if you could make yourself so small to where you'll be as small as these things, then you'll see that they'll be hitting you in the face and all, because they're alive. They're moving all the time. Now, that's what an atom looks like. Now, you have one atom here of oxygen, and you have two of hydrogen bonded together to form the water molecule. You know, you could think of a molecule like this. That's the smallest unit of a substance. Let us take salt, for example. Salt is sodium chloride. That's the chemical formula for salt. And it's made up of one atom of sodium and one atom of chlorine bonded together. You know, when we say bonded together, they're sharing. They're sharing electrons. And then when you have it like that, the smallest bit of salt, that is the smallest bit of salt, to where the salt still retains its property, that would be one molecule. It usually will be smaller than a particle that you can see with the ordinary eye. If you divide it to where it is so tiny that you can't, you know, you can't see it any longer, but still maintains the properties, you know, the sweetness of salt, the saltiness of salt, and all of the properties of salt, you say that's a molecule. That's the tiniest bit of it. Now, for water, the tiniest bit of it, if you want to represent it, it would be H2O. That is two hydrogens and one oxygen. And it will look like this. The big one right there, that's how the atom of the oxygen looks like. And then you have two hydrogens on either side of it. And you notice it looks like a V shape. Okay? Now, the electrons are normally, the electrons in this case, they are the blue balls. And then the nucleus, those the red balls here. You notice hydrogen has a single ball right in the middle. But you notice oxygen has quite a number of balls there because it has both protons and neutrons. Those are the tiny, tiny particles that make up the atom itself. So right in the middle there, you have protons and neutrons. Right in there, you have only proton for hydrogen. And the fact that it has only protons also has a lot to do with its abilities and the power that the hydrogen atom contains. So when you have this together like this, bonded together like this, in fact, it's harmless, it's beneficial to life, and without water, of course, there'll be no, we will not be able to survive as people. But the fact about water is, if you were able to separate these constituent atoms, if you're able to separate them, then you have oxygen separately, you have hydrogen separately, it becomes an explosive mixture. And we're going to see more of that as we're going along. So usually it's, like I said, it's V-shaped. The proton is positively charged. The electron, which is the blue one, is negatively charged. Okay, that is, has a charge. You can think of it like a magnet. You know, you have a bar of magnet. You have on one end, it'll be the South Pole, and on the other end of it will be the North Pole. So you could think of that as some sort of polarity, you know, that is having opposing values on either ends of it. This is something like that, except that this is more like an electrical charge. So on the blue balls, you have a negative charge. On the red balls, you have positive charge. But most of those blue balls, normally, most of those blue balls will spend more of their time around the big one, around this big atom. That's the oxygen atom. So that's going to give a partial positive charge to the hydrogen end. No, they had the two hydrogen ends of it, and a partial negative charge here because it's accumulated more electrons, you know, more negative charge on this side. So that's why it's polar. So it's slightly positive on one end, slightly negative on the other end, and those are some of the things that give it its power. And, of course, give it its the properties that it has as well. You know, so these things are kind of fixed together in specific order to help them to behave in a certain way. You know, that's the associations that they form. And they're able to stick together, forming what we call hydrogen bonds because of this polarity that we have just seen. Now, water is the only substance that occurs naturally as both solid, which is ice, as liquid, which is a normal water that we know, and as gas, which is water vapor. And all at the same time, you know, you could find it like that, you know, on Earth. And it covers about 70% of the surface of the Earth, and 97% of the water is actually salt water, you know, and then the remaining 3% is fresh water that we can drink and use to cook and stuff like that. So, but you might think of water as being commonplace, like an everyday thing, but the truth is there are still a lot of things that scientists still don't fully understand about water. Okay, and some of these things, you know, we're going to be learning, you know, as Yahweh willing, as we grow in the house of Yahweh. Now, oxygen is one of the components of water. And like I said before, if you split water into two, you're going to have oxygen and you're going to have hydrogen. So oxygen is one of the components, and it is the most abundant element. Okay, the word element there, you know, it is the most abundant element on Earth, and it combines with so many different types of other substances to form various things. You find it in water. You find it, as a matter of fact, 89% of the Earth's water, you know, is oxygen. 47% of the Earth's crust also has oxygen, and 23% of the Earth's atmosphere has oxygen. Now, the oxygen in the atmosphere is free oxygen, you know, that's, you know, free that you could breathe in and you could use. But oxygen combined in water, combined in rocks and so on, those are not free forms of oxygen because they are in association with other kinds of atoms. Okay, so they are not free oxygen. So to be able to burn anything, you're going to need free oxygen. You're going to need free oxygen. And because oxygen itself will not burn, but it has to be present before anything can be burned, anything at all. And if you think about it, that you have oxygen that supports burning. The same thing, you're going to need the oxygen to be able to breathe. Otherwise, we're going to suffocate. So you need it to breathe. You need it to burn anything, whatever it is. In fact, sometimes on space programs, they have to take liquid oxygen with them into space where there is no oxygen, you know, to act as oxidizer. You know, because another word for burning is oxidation. You know, it's just another, a fancy word for burning. So you need the oxygen to be able to burn things or to be able to oxidize things, and if you want to use a scientific word there. So so oxygen is very important, and it's we're going to see more of that and why the ability for oxygen to help things to burn, why it's important in this whole story that I'm trying, this whole picture I'm trying to paint. So the next one we're going to be looking at is hydrogen. Hydrogen is the other constituent of water, and of course I said the hydrogen has a single proton right in the middle, that's in the nucleus, and in the shell surrounding it, you have a single electron as well. You have just a single electron. It is the lightest substance known. It is a gas, just like oxygen is a gas, but you normally don't find it in free state, you know, in the atmosphere on Earth. It's usually combined in so many different things, and I'm sure there is a valid reason for that, because if you had hydrogen just lying around and you have oxygen just lying around, you have an explosive mix, you know, and then it could just go up anytime. So you don't find it normally. You have to make it if you need hydrogen. You have to make it. You have to, produce it from different things. We're going to see more of that as we go along. So hydrogen has the highest energy content because it's used as fuel, too. So it has the highest energy content among all the fuels that are used today. In fact, this is from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. And NASA also uses hydrogen as fuel in its space program because it does burn, and it burns really, really hot. You know, and according to the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, to produce usable hydrogen, it has to be separated from water. That is, you're splitting the water molecule now to be able to produce hydrogen. You could also produce it from plant and animal waste, you know, and you could produce it from coal or from from gas, you know, from that's the oil from the oil industry. There's a lot of interest in using hydrogen today in powering vehicles and powering different things because of its ability to burn, its ability to act as fuel. So you have various people trying to develop fuel cells and trying to use hydrogen in one way or another, and they're trying right now to harness the power of hydrogen. But in order to help us understand how powerful hydrogen is, I hope we remember the Hindenburg airship that blew up. That was in New Jersey on May 6, 1937. As it was heading to its dock, it had passengers on board. It had a big balloon. And there's a picture of it right here. Now, at that time, the big balloon was filled with hydrogen because hydrogen is very light. It will lift the balloon very easily. And they had a number of, they made a number of mistakes. Of course, they did all their calculations and everything, and they thought they had it all, they had everything, all the details spelled out on paper. And then the ship went up. They had, certain materials on the coating of the balloon to help it reflect light. And those are some of the problems. You had oxygen in there. You had materials that could actually create static electricity on the outside, and that actually created a spark. And all you need when you have hydrogen mixed with oxygen, all you need is a spark, however small. Even static electricity will set it off, and you hear the boom. And it does explode with a large roar. So that airship exploded because of the power of hydrogen. In fact, that was the first time the world became aware of how powerful the hydrogen could be. And hydrogen really does burn, and it burns with a loud explosion. Now, it is very light, and because it is very light, because of its small weight, the energy storage capacity of hydrogen is very high. Actually, it's about 119,000 joules per gram. That's the joules is a measurement of energy. Okay, it's 119,000 joules per gram, and if you want to compare that with oil, oil is about 40,000 joules per gram. So 190,000 to 40,000 joules per gram in the case of oil. So it packs quite a punch. It's really more powerful than oil as a fuel. So when you mix with oxygen, like I said, and then there is you need an ignition source. You need some sort of spark or something to set it off, and then you're going to go. It's going to go up in a few seconds. And another event that actually will show us how powerful hydrogen can be, which is a constituent of water that we drink every day, is what occurred at Fukushima. The Fukushima Daiichi, Fukushima Daini plants in Japan. After the tsunami, the plants were damaged. The generators, the power plants were also knocked out. So the power plants were supposed to power the pumps that would send, pump water into the plant, into the reactor. That's to cool it down, actually. So water is supposed to serve as coolant. But when you don't have the pumps working, it means water cannot continue to circulate over the rods. Then it gets very hot in there, and when it gets very hot, it's going to start boiling off the water that is already in there. Fresh water is not coming in to replace the already hot one. So it's going to boil up to where the water starts to evaporate, and you're going to have, fuel rods exposed. And of course, when it gets so hot, they began to crack. And when they began to crack, and water found its way in there. And when water found its way in there, of course, the water starts to boil. And if you get water hot enough, you're going to separate it, and you're going to start to produce hydrogen immediately. So they found that there was a lot of hydrogen buildup in the plants as a result of contact of water with the heat. And in fact, we're going to speak more about how nuclear energy can help to produce this hydrogen and then fill up the whole place. And then, but right at the plant, there was a lot of hydrogen buildup. Of course, they knew this was going to be a problem because they had hydrogen building up there. You had other gases too. You had oxygen as well in there. So they had to do something immediately to vent the hydrogen. And when they tried to vent it, I think they vented too much. That is to allow the hydrogen to escape to reduce the pressure in the reactors. They allowed too much of it to go out. It mixed in with oxygen. And of course, in an accident situation like it was in Fukushima, a spark would not be so far away. And the explosions took place. that blew off the roof of the reactor, you know, buildings. And then this same thing was replicated in many other nuclear reactors because of the hydrogen buildup inside. So this is coming from the water, the very same water that is supposed to cool it. And that is what has turned into the bomb that blew up the reactors. You know, it's funny, but that is just what occurred in Fukushima. And you can find that on howstuffworks.com, how Fukushima works. You know, so that's some of the things that, those are some of the things that, you know, we can learn from water. So oxygen helps things to burn. Now, hydrogen itself can burn and can burn real hot. And the two of them have been put together in water that we drink, and that is very vital for our life. And of course, because of the powerful properties of water and some of the constituents of water, scientists and businesses all over the world have been trying to harness the power, like I said. And one of the ways they try to use to split water is, they call it photolysis. Photo refers to light, and lysis, L-Y-S-I-S, refers to splitting or bursting or breaking up. So you're talking about light breaking up with the power of light. In fact, this is a process that already takes place in the leaves of green plants. It's part of one of the photosystems that helps in the process of photosynthesis when sunlight is trapped by the bugs or by the microbes in the leaves. And then that energy is used to break water up. And that, of course, the whole process. And then you have carbohydrates produced. You have the food that we eat produced. So they are learning from these green leaves, from the bugs in these leaves. And they're trying to replicate the same thing. Of course, they don't have all the things the leaves have. So they need to use a number of intermediate products that, you know, so it's a complex situation. But put it simply, they are trying to trap the energy from the sun and use that to break up, to crack up the water molecules so that you can have hydrogen. You can even have oxygen, and you have to have a way of collecting them. You know, so that's one of the things that they're trying to do. And of course, when you're dealing with hydrogen, there is always the danger of explosion. But in the case of the microbes in the leaves, of course, there will be no explosion because, you know, the way Yahweh has made it, it just goes on smoothly. But in the case of scientists or engineers trying to put these things together, there is always the real risk of explosions. So according to a paper titled For the Chemical Production of Hydrogen and Oxygen from Water, a review and state of the art by Edmond Amoyal, published in the journal Solar Energy Materials and Solar Cells, it's number 38, 1995, from page 249 to 276, it says, for the chemical hydrogen production is potentially one of the most fascinating ways for solar energy conversion and storage. Several model systems of hydrogen or oxygen generation from water by visible light irradiation. You know, that is when you use, you know, light rays. You know, that's the rays of light is, you know, that's what they call mean by visible light irradiation, have been proposed. Visible light water splitting or photolysis, that is splitting with light. Photolysis or visible light water splitting of water into hydrogen and oxygen remains one of the most exciting challenges for scientists, especially photochemists. Now, there's another book that I had to look at, or look at parts of it, which is Hydrogen Production from Nuclear Energy, which is a part that really interests me. If you remember the Fukushima example that I gave before, there are five general methods, you know, that they proposed. And of course, there are a few other methods that were mentioned in this book that I'm also going to mention right now. Five general methods that they proposed for splitting water molecules. And this is where it gets interesting. The first method they mentioned is radiolysis. Radiolysis. Of course, like I said, when you see lysis, L-Y-S-I-S, that means bursting or breaking up. And when you see radio, what it refers to is radiation. And where does radiation come from? From nuclear explosions, from nuclear reactors. So when there's a nuclear explosion, there's going to be a lot of radiation. Where there is a nuclear reactor, there's going to be radiation generated too. And so that means radiation can directly split open the molecules of water to release the hydrogen. And remember, when you have the hydrogen released, there is going to be the oxygen as well. And when the two of them are there, you have a bomb, potential bomb in your hands. So that's the first one there. The second method is electrolysis. That's using electricity, passing electricity through water to be able to split it. You know, that's already being commonly used, and you could do that in very small amounts to where it can be somewhat controlled. And the third method is mentioned here is high temperature steam electrolysis. And the fourth method is hybrid thermochemical water splitting. Well, these two methods, and we use both heat and electricity. You know, that's basically. But the fifth method, which also is interesting to me, that is the thermochemical water splitting. Of course, when you see thermo, it refers to heat. So thermochemical, or another word for it is thermolysis. Thermolysis or thermolysis, depending on what part of the world you come from. Thermolysis or thermolysis, which is breaking up using heat now. We spoke about photolysis, now it's thermolysis. And of course, when you talk about thermolysis, that's exactly what took place in Fukushima, where the heat helped to break open or burst or lyse the molecules of water to release the hydrogen as well as the oxygen, and then the explosive mix was created. The moment air was mixed into it, and of course the spark, you know, started going off. So this is thermolysis, which is the fourth one, which is splitting water using heat. Now, just a second. Of all the methods of splitting water, like I said, the direct using heat, you know, as well as the radiolysis, they are the two most interesting. And there was a paper titled Hydrogen Production from Water, you know, which was published in Energy Carriers and Conversion Systems, Volume 1, you know, where it says the direct thermal decomposition, that is the breaking up or splitting of water, involves splitting water in one step using only heat. In other words, if you make it hot enough, you're going to split it into hydrogen and into oxygen. Now, this needs extremely high temperatures of over 5,000 degrees Kelvin. Now, degrees Kelvin is one of the measurement systems used in science for heat. But that is about 4,726 degrees Celsius, or about 8,500 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, which is the more familiar one around here, 8,500 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, you need to apply that much heat to be able to split the water molecules. Now, in normal applications, like if you were doing this in a, you know, for the purpose of collecting hydrogen, you want to use, you know, this is not realistic because it would be difficult to supply that much heat, you know, in normal applications. And it would be difficult also, the technology that is required to support this method of production of hydrogen, that's splitting water to release the hydrogen and oxygen, is going to be a little bit difficult to come by too. But we need to consider other things here. And some of the things we need to consider here is when you have, when you have a nuclear explosion, there's going to be a lot of heat generated. And the heat generated is going to be so much, in excess of 150 million degrees Celsius. That's at the very core of the nuclear explosion. That is going to be about 270 million degrees Fahrenheit. 270 million degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that certainly they'll get all the heat they need to split any water vapors or any water molecules that may be about. And usually, when there's a nuclear explosion, and of course when you have the kind of exchange that has been, even a small-scale exchange, there is going to be a lot of heat generated, and there's going to be a lot of water vapor rising up above the oceans. There is going to be a lot of water vapor in the air, you know, there's going to be a lot of water vapor in the air, and there's going to be, you know, the clouds are there too. So there's going to be water vapor everywhere, and water droplets and so on. So with the heat, the fervent heat that could be generated from a nuclear explosion, you're certainly going, apart from the explosion and the burning from the direct effect of the nuclear bombs now, you're going to have water molecules quickly broken up into hydrogen and into oxygen. Usually, like I said before, you don't have too much hydrogen, or another name for it is protons, in the atmosphere in normal situations. But when you have a nuclear explosion scenario, that balance is going to be altered tremendously, and you're going to have a lot of hydrogen buildup in the atmosphere. When you have hydrogen in the atmosphere, you have oxygen there, and you don't need you don't need to look too far away to get a spark when there was a nuclear explosion recently, and then you're going to have that. The atmosphere actually burning up. Okay, so these are some of the things that could take place. And if we remember again the events at Fukushima, because a nuclear reactor, what takes place in there is, you know, showing you an example. You could learn a lot from it, you know, about what could take place, you know, where there is an explosion, where there's such an accident as Fukushima and Chernobyl and many other accidents that have taken place in history relating to nuclear energy. So there's going to be a lot more hydrogen produced, apart from the hydrogen produced by direct heat. There's going to be hydrogen produced from water by radiation. Remember, when there's a nuclear explosion, there is a lot of radiation generated too. The radiation, there's going to be radiolysis, breaking up of water molecules into the constituent hydrogen and oxygen. All of this is going to hang up in the air. Okay? It's going to be there in the atmosphere, in the firmament. And when you have a lot of buildup, then you're setting the stage for a very, very dangerous situation where the entire firmament could actually be engulfed in fire. I want us to take another look at this. This is just in one balloon. Okay? And that's the balloon when it actually landed. All right? This is not from a nuclear explosion. So we can imagine what would occur when there's a nuclear explosion and all of these other reactions are taking place. There's a buildup of hydrogen. So it can really, really pack a punch, like I said before. So if we look over quickly to Isaiah, that's on page 544, Isaiah 24:19-20, it reads here, the earth is utterly broken down, the earth is dissolved clean, the earth is shaking exceedingly. The earth will reel to and fro like a drunkard and will sway like a hut. The transgression in it will be heavy upon it. It will fall and not rise again. And so basically there's going to be a maddening roar, of course, when hydrogen explodes. Usually the amount of sound that you hear from a nuclear explosion will be about 280 decibels. And we're talking here now not of just an explosion at specific regions. We're talking about an all-out. But I need to point out something very quickly. I know that there have been nuclear explosions in the past, you know, small-scale nuclear explosions. And during tests, and of course in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the bombs they had back then, you know, they are toys compared to what they have right now. So that there is no way you can properly prepare for the outcome of a nuclear explosion, particularly when you have a number of nations who are eager, you know, to use them. If you don't want to use them, why test all the time? Why manufacture and then heat up the whole system? So we can never properly prepare for the outcome. That's from the point of view of scientists. They usually think that they have everything under control. They can pretty much predict everything. But I know that they can't predict anything. I know that the only place you can know what is going to take place anytime in the future is here at the house of Yahweh, which is where we get all the accurate information about what is fixing to take place now. So there's going to be the maddening roar. And if we look on again to Isaiah 24, the same Isaiah 24, we just go up to verse 18 now. It says, and it will come to pass that he who flees from the noise of the fear... That's on page 544. And he who flees from the noise of the fear will fall into the pit. And he who comes up from the midst of the pit will be caught up in the snare. For the windows from on high are open. Okay? The windows from on high are open and the foundations of the earth are shaken. The heat, which is already intense, will build up beyond imaginable proportions as the atmosphere burns up, as the elements, as it were, melt with the fervent heat. And if we go on to our second key for page 963 now. Second key for 3, verse 10. It says, but the day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, the roar, the bang, you know, there's going to be huge noise. And the elements will melt with fervent heat. both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Since all these things will then be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and righteousness? And Pastor tells us, sin never again. Verse 12 now says, you must look for and earnestly long for the day of Yahweh, because of which the heavens will be dissolved in fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. And these are some of the the things that are, will be occurring after, there is a nuclear explosion. The splitting of water, the intense fire, and the intense heat. But there is another thing I'd like to call attention to very quickly. I know my time is about up now. Which is, in 1945, when the nuclear test was going to be done at the Trinity sites in New Mexico, that's in the desert there, there was one of the scientists who were working on the Manhattan Project, Edward Teller. He had warned the world at that time of the possibility of igniting the entire atmosphere. He had warned that there was a possibility that you could have, when you have a nuclear explosion, that the heat generated and the radiation could actually, and of course some of the particles that spring out from the nuclear fission, that could actually set a chain reaction in motion to where there will be fusion of nitrogen, the nucleus, like we saw, the nucleus of nitrogen gas in the atmosphere, and that it might be difficult to stop that reaction from continuing, and you could have the entire atmosphere, the entire Earth, turn into a giant fusion bomb, as it were. At that time, they did some calculations and, and they felt, the kind of bombs they had at the time, this is actually from a declassified document from the Los Alamos National Laboratory Research Library, where they said, with the kind of bombs they had at the time, that it wasn't likely that to take place. And of course, when the bombs were detonated, at the test site and later at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that didn't take place. Because they said that they couldn't generate enough heat and enough, to be able to sustain that reaction at that time. But the bombs we have today, some of them are 500 times, 600 times or more powerful than the bombs used back then. So that the situation today is different from what we had in 1945. So, and they went on to say that there remains a possibility. There remains a possibility. Okay, it says that there remained the possibility that the products of the nitrogen-nitrogen reactions will themselves react with fresh nitrogen nuclei and contribute to the energy gains. That this possibility is enhanced during the period in which the primary product particles have not yet lost all their energy. In other words, that possibility remains. It didn't take place back then. It doesn't mean it won't take place now. All you have to do is have the right conditions for all these things to take place. And to really have the entire atmosphere. In fact, all of the possible scenarios point to the fact that these things will occur exactly as the witness has said. And my time is up. And if you'll all please stand. And I'd like to turn the services over to the great Kahan, David Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. It's an honor to address the called out ones of our Heavenly Father, Yahweh. You may be seated. The title of my sermon today is, What We Practice Is What We Teach. What we practice is what we teach. And there are several things I'd like to cover in the sermon today, just summarized here to begin with. First of all, I'd like to reiterate that the teachings of the peaceful solution are the applications of Yahweh's 613 laws. I'd also like to show through the scriptures here that the peaceful solution character education program is for everyone, both non-members and members of the house of Yahweh. And the third thing I'd like to show here is that it is not enough to know and teach the peaceful solution, but we must be the first to practice the peaceful solution. I'd like to begin in the book of Job. And so if you turn to chapter 1, verse 1 in the book of Job in the book of Yahweh. And Pastor has explained that Job's name was better defined as Yashub. So I'm going to use Yashub throughout the sermon here today. So in Yashub chapter 1, verse 1, we read that in the land of Uz, there lived a man, Yashub was his name. That man was perfect, blameless and upright. So here was Yashub described as blameless and upright. He reverenced Yahweh and he shunned evil. It means he avoided evil. He never sinned. Then Yahweh said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Yashub? There is none like him in the earth, a perfect, blameless, and upright man, one who reverences Yahweh and shuns evil." So Yahweh was bragging about Yashub. He's bragging about him and about his righteousness. And if you go to chapter 2 here in Yashub, verse 3, then Yahweh said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Yashub?" Now this is the second time that Yahweh is mentioning Yashub's name, the adversary. "Have you considered my servant Yashub? There is none like him on the earth, a perfect, blameless and upright man, one who reverences Yahweh and shuns evil. And he still holds fast to his integrity, even though you incited me, Satan, against him, against Yashub, to destroy him without a cause." So you can see that Yashub was going through some trying and testing here. So Satan answered Yahweh and said, "Skin for skin, a man will give all that he has for his own life. But reach out with your hand and strike his flesh and bones, then he will curse you to your face." Then Yahweh replied to Satan, "Behold, he is in your power, but you must spare his life." So, you know, Yeshua was allowed to be tested here severely. Then Satan left Yahweh's presence and afflicted Yashub with severe skin inflammation, with painful sores from the bottom of his foot to the top of his head. Yashub took a piece of broken pottery to scrape himself while he sat in ashes. So Yahweh allowed Yashub to be severely tested. I want to bring the testing of Yashub into this sermon to make a comparison with before his testing and after his testing that Yahweh allowed here. If you would go to Psalm chapter 19 now. Psalm chapter 19, let's look at 7 through 11 in Psalm chapter 19, verse 7. It says, "The laws of Yahweh are perfect, converting the whole person." And that's what we want to become, a completely converted person. "The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making the simple ones wise. The statutes of Yahweh are right, rejoicing the heart, the mind. The commandments of Yahweh are pure, bringing understanding to the eyes." So the laws of Yahweh change our hearts and minds, just as the peaceful solution is designed to change the hearts and minds of those who practice the peaceful solution. Verse 9, "The reverence of Yahweh is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of Yahweh are true and altogether righteous. They are more to be desired than wealth." It says gold. Yes, even more than fine gold. "They are sweeter than honey and the honeycomb." And in verse 11, "Moreover, by them your servants are warned, and in keeping them is great reward." The word perfect here, the laws of Yahweh are perfect, it means entire. It means truth, and we know in Psalm 119, 142, 151 that the commandments are truth. So it means in its entirety, the laws of Yahweh are perfect. Converting, the word converting is Hebrew word 7725, and it means to turn back. In the sense of returning, as Pastor has said in sermons, returning to the original way that Yahweh taught, that Yahweh intended man to live. And so to return to the original, to turn back, converting. If you go to Matithya 18 and verse 2, Yeshua called a little child to him and set him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, saying to each and every one of us, unless you are converted and become like little children, you will not enter into the kingdom of Yahweh. So we have to become humble. And, you know, to return back to the, in our conformance to the laws of Yahweh. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of Yahweh. Go over to the book of Jacob, the book of James, or Jacob, James in the King James Version. Jacob chapter 4. I'd like you to look at verses 7 and 10. Jacob chapter 4, verses 7 and 10. In Jacob 4, verse 7, therefore submit yourselves to Yahweh, resist the devil, resist the adversary, and she will flee from you. She's like a roaring lion seeking whom she can destroy. She's looking for her weaknesses. So if we resist the adversary, she's going to leave and bring her tests and trials on someone else. Verse 10, humble yourself in the sight of Yahweh, and he will lift you up. There's that word humble. This is what occurred to Yeshub. Yahweh allowed him to be tested. In the end of the matter, Yahweh lifted him up. And we're going to read a little bit about that a little later here. In 1 Timothy 1, verse 7, if you turn to 1 Timothy chapter 1, and let's look at verse 7. We're going to look at verses 7 and 8 in 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy 1, verse 7, who long to be teachers of the law, we all desire to be teachers of righteousness, teachers of the law. We all desire that. But do not understand what they say, nor the things they strongly assert. So we must learn the law that we can teach the law and pray for wisdom and understanding. And that's why we attend the classes. That's why we attend services. We read and study the information brought forth by the witness, Israel Abel Hawkins. This is so that we may gain understanding. And if you look at verse 8, we know indeed that the law is perfect. There's that word perfect. And notice the rest of this scripture. We know indeed that the law is perfect if one agrees with the law, taking the law to himself to use. So you see, we need to take it and apply it. We need to show it in our actions. The Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, a book, Moral Excellence, page 114, a cold hard fact here. It says, your actions determine your character. If you act only on negative thoughts and emotions without considering how your actions affect yourself and others, you are not maintaining a positive character. Self-control requires you to stop, think, and weigh the consequences of our actions. And so I have a question. Are our actions in unity, in agreement with our words? In other words, going back to the title of the sermon, what we practice is what we teach. An example here. If we are teaching a class, or even if we're a student in a class, and we show up late for class, then by our actions, we are showing that we are not yet perfect when practicing the positive character traits such as responsible and reliable. It would be rather embarrassing to be the teacher of a Peaceful Solution class and being late for class to teach a lesson on the positive character traits of responsibility and reliability. So if you all turn to Romans chapter 12 and verse 3, Romans chapter 12 and verse 3. The Apostle Shaul here wrote in Romans chapter 12 and verse 3, he said, for by the unmerited mercy given to me, I say to everyone who is among you, do not think of yourself or ourselves more highly than we ought, but rather think soberly. And the word soberly has that context of humility, being humble, in accordance as Yahweh has dealt to each one the measure of faith. So we all have gifts. We all have our own set of gifts that we bring to the house of Yahweh for the building up of the house of Yahweh. We're all different. Yahweh created us all different. So we all have our own set of blessings. And we should think, you know, of our, in terms of being humble and soberly, as it says here. I have a question for everyone. The Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, who is it designed to reach out to? Who does it apply to? Now, I've got three choices here. Number one, only House of Yahweh members. The second choice is only non-members of the House of Yahweh who have not yet learned the 613 laws of Yahweh. And the third choice is everyone. Everyone. And of course, you all have the correct answer there. The peaceful solution applies to everyone. I have heard this. You may not believe this, but I've heard members, or a member, thinking of one member, who said, we don't need the peaceful solution. We've got the laws of Yahweh. The peaceful solution is for the world. I've heard that voiced. But the peaceful solution, we know, is for everyone. It's for everyone. You may say that it is obvious that the peaceful solution is for everyone, but I have heard some people say that it does not apply to them, that is, for those who are not members of the house of Yahweh. In the seventh book of Yisrael, Teachers of Righteousness, part 2, page 225, verse 101, Pastor Hawkins wrote, he said, we should be quick to forgive and we should be instant in trying to find a peaceful solution. His words, showing that the peaceful solution applies to everyone. I'd like you to turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 12, where it reads, and may Yahweh make your love to increase and abound one to another and to all, just as we do to you. So the peaceful solution is for everyone. In every family, the husband, the head, is a teacher of righteousness. I like to think of these words, teacher of righteousness, as the first to perform righteousness. It is like saying to our family members, to our fellow workers, if you're younger, to your classmates, your children, to your classmates, it's like saying, follow me, I will show you how to be righteous by my actions, by my examples, by my works. This applies to supervisors. It applies to everyone who's desiring to enter into Yahweh's soon coming kingdom of righteousness. If you all turn over to Exodus 23 and verse 13, Exodus 23 and verse 13, I'd like to, Exodus 23 and verse 13, I'd like to read a portion of this verse, first of all from the King James Version, because there's one word in here I'd like to bring forth here. In the King James Version, Exodus 23:13, in all things that I have said unto you, be circumspect. And the word circumspect means to hedge about. It's word 8104, to hedge about, that is to guard, to protect, to attend to. Now, in the book of Yahweh, it reads, in all things I have said to you, be careful to do them. And this scripture was given after Yahweh had given the laws to the children of Israel. And he says, be careful to attend to these things. Now, another verse that backs up this Exodus 23:13 is Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 20. 20 through 23. Proverbs 4, 20 through 23, where it says, my son, pay attention to my laws and incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them in the center of your heart. The word keep there means, again, it means a little different. It's Hebrews 53:41. It means to guard. In other words, to protect, to maintain, to obey. For these laws that you're keeping in the center of your heart, they mean life to you, to those who find them, and health to the whole body. In verse 23, we're all familiar with 23, guard your mind. And some of the information that was brought forth today, excellent information on guarding our mind from music, from video games, from television, from negative influences that can soil our mind, just like that orange that was presented was soiled. So those are all great reminders for us. Guard your mind with all diligence, for out of your mind flows the springs of life. I'd like you to go over to Luke chapter 2 and verse 25. Luke chapter 2 and verse 25. And this is an example of a man who practiced a peaceful solution back in Yeshua's time. In Luke chapter 2, verse 25, now behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon, and this man was very just and circumspect. There's that word circumspect, and in parentheses or in italics in the book of Yahweh, he was careful to consider all things, notice, before acting. He was careful to consider all things before acting. And this man was waiting for the consolation of Israel. In other words, he's waiting for the revealing of Yahshua. And Spirit Holy was upon him. Now it was revealed to Simeon by Spirit Holy that he would not see death before he had seen Yahweh's anointed one, Yahshua. And he did. The child was presented and he got to view or got to see Yahshua, and he recognized Yahshua. Turn over to Jacob chapter 2. Jacob chapter 2. Jacob chapter 2 and verse 14. Jacob chapter 2, verse 14. What does it profit, my brothers, if a man says he has faith but does not have works? These are the actions. The faith is not able to save him. In verse 18 of that same chapter, Jacob 2, yes, a man may say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works. And I, Jacob said, will show you my faith by my works, by my actions. You believe there is one Father, you do well. The demons, the gods, they also believe that Yahweh is the only source of power, even though they bring forth a false power, false signs and wonders. But they tremble at the thought of Yahweh and his righteousness. Verse 20, but are you willing to know that the faith without works is dead? Practicing in the peaceful solution brings benefits. We lose benefits if our actions don't match our words. If you turn to Jacob, in the same chapter, or same book actually, Jacob 3, verse 13, Jacob 3:13. Who is wise and understanding among you, let him show it by his righteous conduct. In other words, behavior. Children, righteous conduct, righteous behavior. Adults, righteous conduct, righteous behavior. By works done in meekness, there's that word meekness, humility, which comes from wisdom. The wisdom that Yahweh supplies in his law. So, you know, the word behavior there, it goes back to conduct, goes conversation in the King James Version. Let's go to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 15. Matthew 5 verse 15. Matthew 5 verse 15. Neither do men light a lamp and hide it under a basket, but put it on a lampstand that it gives light to all who are in the house. And that's what Pastor's doing for us every time he teaches us, every book he writes, every newsletter he puts out, and the letters he sends out to the news media. Let your light so shine before men, so they may see your righteous works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Let's go over to Revelation 20 and verse 12. I'm going to read this to you, the King James Version of this, Revelation 20, verse 12, where it reads, And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before Yahweh, and the books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of it, out of those things that were written in the books according to their works. So there's that, you know, bringing forth actions, works, behavior, by our works. And that word works there, it means actions. We, the teachers of the peaceful solution, must be the first to practice the peaceful solution. Our actions are consistently under the microscope of people who analyze the peaceful solution teachers and the program. What we say, the teachers of the peaceful solution, what we practice, every one of us is under the microscope daily. We're being analyzed, scrutinized, observed daily. Our actions scream out the thoughts and intents of our heart much louder than our words could ever proclaim. Turn on over to Luke chapter 13. Turn on over to Luke chapter 13 and verse 14. Yeshua used an interesting word here in Luke chapter 13 and verse 14, and he used it quite a bit in speaking to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Essenes, and the Herodians. He used this word quite a bit in Luke chapter 13, verse 14. But the ruler of the synagogue responded with indignation because Yeshua had healed on the Sabbath day and said to the people, the ruler of the synagogue said to the people, there are 6 days in which man ought to work. Therefore, come on one of them and be healed, but not on the Sabbath day. And pastors taught us much, 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 given us much wisdom and understanding about how to keep the Sabbath day and what Yeshua actually taught regarding the Sabbath. Verse 15, Yeshua answered him and said, hypocrite, does not each one of you release his ox or donkey from the stall and lead him away to water on the Sabbath day? Now, this word hypocrite, it's a very interesting word. Because it kind of gave me insight into what Yeshua was talking about to the group who professed to teach the law but weren't actually practicing it. It's from Greek word 5273 and from 5271, and it means an actor under the assumed character, stage player. This is right out of Strong's Concordance. An actor under an assumed character, a stage player. And that's how we describe these Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, Herodians. If you turn on over to Matthias 7, verse 4, how can you say to your brother, and you can say this to the group of men who profess to teach the law here, how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when, behold, a beam is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first remove the beam from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So, now, I'd like to go back to Job here, and just, I'd like you to turn over to Yeshub, the book of Job and the book of Yahweh, Yeshub 32 and verse 2. But the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barakel, flared up against Yeshub because he, Yeshub, justified himself rather than Yahweh. So it wasn't so much this righteous man's wrath. It was his irritation at some of the things that Yeshub said. So in verse 33, verse 9, Yeshub had said, I am pure without transgression. I, Yeshub, am innocent. There is no iniquity in me. Yeshub also said during his testing, he said, yet he, Yahweh, finds pretext against me and counts me as an enemy. Yeshub said those things. Elihu continued in verse, and I'm just going to go through this in the book of Yeshub, 34 verse 1. Elihu continued and said, for Yeshub has said, it benefits man nothing when he tries to please Yahweh. So, you know, you understand that there were some things he didn't understand, and his testing brought that out. 35 verse 14. Elihu continued answering and said, How much less will Yahweh listen to you when you say you cannot see him? Yet justice is in Yahweh's presence, but you must wait on him. You must wait on Yahweh. Yashub 36, verse 1. Elihu proceeded speaking. Verse 26. Behold, Yahweh is greater than we know, than we can understand, comprehend at this time. Yahweh is greater than we know. He's beyond our understanding. The number of his years are innumerable and beyond comprehension. Yashub 38, verse 1. Then Yahweh answered Yashub out of the whirlwind and said, now this is after Elihu got done speaking and correcting Yashub. Now Yahweh's doing a little correcting on his own. And he says, Yashub, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? When I put, tell me if you have understanding. You know, if you know everything about my plan, and you know, tell me if you have understanding. Now, this was Yashub's response in 40, verse 1. Actually, Yahweh's continuing here. I'd like to read in Yashub 40, verse 7. Yahweh said, now stand up and prepare yourself like a man, for I will question you and you will answer me. We read in Revelation 20, verse 12, that the books are going to be open and we're going to be standing upright and we're going to be going through this very thing that Yashub went through here. This is a practice run. Now stand up and prepare yourself like a man, for I will question you and you will answer me. And verse 8 here of Yashub 40, would you cause my judgment to cease? Would you condemn me so you may be justified? Are we going to say that to Yahweh? Now, after the testing, after the correction that he received from Elihu and Yahweh, verse 42, verse 1, then Yashub answered Yahweh and said, I know that you, Yahweh, this is after Yashub gained additional understanding and after he humbled himself. I know that you, Yahweh, can do all things. And no thought or purpose of yours can be changed. Yahweh, you asked, who is this that obscures and darkens my counsel without knowledge? Yashub said, I see that I spoke of things which I did not understand. I spoke of things too wonderful which I did not know. Listen to me, I beg you, Yahweh, and I will speak. You, Yahweh, said to me, I will question you and you will answer. And notice what Yashub's conclusion was here. And Yashub said, my ears had heard of you. And this was at a time when Yahweh said, blameless and upright. Yashub is blameless and upright. So Yashub continues here, verse 5. My ears had heard of you, but now, Yahweh, my eyes see you. So you see the additional understanding Yashub received. And you notice the next verse, Yashub's humbling himself, and he said, therefore, I, Yashub, despise and abhor myself, and I repent in dust and ashes. So you can see the transition, what the testing brought. You know, he went through some tough times, very tough times, but in the end, he stuck with it, and he gained additional understanding from Yahweh. If you would, just for your notes, Matthias 7, verse 20, therefore by their fruits you will know them. And in conclusion here, brethren, by our fruits, our actions, our works, always be in unity with the laws of Yahweh, the peaceful solution. In the Moral Excellence book, page 125, Setting Your Mind in Advance, a key step to developing the character trait of discipline and maintaining your positive character is to set your mind in advance to make positive moral choices. Setting your mind in advance means to predetermine that you will not be influenced to do anything that is wrong. by setting your mind in advance to be morally responsible and make morally responsible choices, you can avoid actions or emotions that cloud your judgment. So be ready to face those unexpected situations. Unexpected situations. The great municipal judge who has embraced and endorsed the peaceful solution, she said in her testimony, she said, "Trouble lies in surprises." You're expecting a perfect day, and what occurs? Trouble. And what are you going to do now? Trouble lies in surprises. Yes, it does. So, first of all, don't expect a perfect day. Just expect that Yahweh, beg Yahweh to allow you to wake up with health and strength and the ability to serve Yahweh in whatever you're doing. There's going to be situations where you're going to be unexpectedly frustrated, unexpectedly tested. But you know, I'd like to conclude here by going back to 1 Timothy 1, verse 8. This is already in your notes, covered it. 1 Timothy 1, verse 8. "We know indeed that the law is perfect. If one agrees with the law, taking it to himself to use." I'd like to conclude with that. Brothers, sisters, children, what we practice is what we teach. May you please stand. May Yahweh bless your understanding. And it's my honor and privilege to turn the services over to the Kahan for closing prayer.